each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyce here with you. That means it's Wednesday, and that means be prepared to have your brain wrinkled once again, because it always happens on Wednesday, wrinkling Wednesday. And that little laugh in the background gives me a chance to share a very special lady with me today. One of my favorite persons that I've met in the past few years. She's dynamic. She's intelligent. She's a hard worker. She's an IT guru and wizard of all. How's that, Rachel?
I try.
She's trying. That's Rachel Gerardo, who's part of the Chesterton Academy team. She's also part of the St. James team, and she's probably part of a lot of other teams that I don't even know about. So, Rachel, say hello to our millions of listeners and the Winds of Change.
Hello, millions of listeners.
Indeed.
How are you?
You didn't know we had those people behind the screen there, did you?
Don't show for anything. Yes, this is great.
Indeed. Well, if you get my...
I don't know.
You're going to find out. That's what's going to happen. If you got my flock note, I send out a flock note oftentimes with a little teaser so that you can tune in. The Winds of Change come noontime right here on 750. And the topic I want to tackle today is why Catholics especially, but I'm going to say... all believers, but why history is so important to Catholicism, and why Catholics really have to be historians in one way or another, and why maybe it's difficult. And I want to tackle one of the great one of the narratives that's very common in the hearts and minds of many.
My Lord, there's such destruction.
Well, the destruction comes in misreading history or re-narrating. Is that really how do you say it? Repackaging?
Repackaging, yeah.
Repackaging, or yeah.
Reading certain ideals into it.
Yeah. Keep your mouth close to the windscreen there so that we can, it won't fade away. But anyways, that being the Protestant Reformation and how the modern world certainly has been shaped and a great deal by the Protestant Reformation, and how us in the Catholic world have to be appreciative of, okay, I'll say it this way, what good advantages came about, but also some of the very bad consequences that I think really you could say were unintended, or maybe some of it was intended. Certainly certain principles were intended, and they didn't think them through far enough. And 500 years later, now we get to see some fruits and thorns, or fruits in the form of thorns. So to really appreciate that sense of history. Before we get into that segment of history, what I'd like to do is try to explain, if you are a listener, if you're a listener to the Winds of Change, and especially if you're like listening on Wednesdays when Father Coy's wrinkles your brain, you probably
going to need a bigger boat.
Well, and we'll need a bigger radio show because we always get into big topics. But if you do like listening to Winds of Change, most likely you like history and your mind is thirsty for episodes of the past that mean something today. Am I right? Don't you think, Rachel? Wouldn't that be? But let us assume that there's a couple of listeners out there that aren't really, that don't like history. Or maybe even Nick. We could look at Nick, our marvelous tech man there at the boards. How deep into history is Nick? I don't know that much, you know. I think, I know he likes the history of comic books.
Wow.
And
he just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that wrinkles your brain. And a few other interesting things. Our interests have history to them, but I'm especially wanting to talk about world history, where it relates to religion and wars. I guess, you know, when you study history, you can't help but study the history of wars. But why, Rachel? You're dealing with a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. Rachel is from Chestern Academy, like I mentioned. Why don't you just say, I know what Chestern Academy is. Many of our listeners may not.
Sure.
What is Chestern Academy, and who hangs around there?
Oh, cool people hang around there, obviously. No, Chesterton Academy is actually, Chesterton Academy of the Holy Family is actually a high school out in the western suburbs. We have a classical integrated curriculum that brings the faith into every classroom. So basically what that means is they study the great books in sequential chronological order. And so they learn to make connections between history, literature, theology, philosophy, and other subjects. And yeah, it's awesome. So it's it's a four-year high school for co-ed. We're growing pretty fast. And yeah, it's a really cool place.
Yeah, it really is. I've told the students there, and I got to tell our audience, that when I'm there and I see, it's a small, some young people are going to, if you're a mom or dad and you want to make sure to keep your high schoolers Catholic, you really got to consider, and if you live anywhere near Lombard now, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be in Lombard. You were in Downers Grove, but now you're going to be in Lombard. Mm-hmm. But if you live anywhere near there, and you want to keep your kids Catholic, you really got to consider Chesterton Academy of the Holy Family. But I'll warn you right off the bat, because I know young people. I was one once. And it's a small school. It's a small school, growing, like you said, but not like what young, when someone's in eighth grade and they're getting ready to graduate and they're looking forward to high school.
Show me the money!
Show me the money. That was the little clip there.
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. So, obviously, when you're talking about a high school, a Catholic high school, you got to show them the money. Chesterton tries to keep it lower, doesn't it?
Yeah,
tuition is lower. Well, it's not free, of course.
No. I mean, we are growing. We're just under 100. It's looking like for the next academic year. But you know, I think the benefit of staying relatively small is that you do have a lot of, you can have better discussions in the classroom.
Yeah.
You know, that encourages students to take ownership of what they're learning. But it also feels a lot like a family. That's the thing I really love about it.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people do. And, you know, we consider you a part of our family. So I think it lets us, you know, just kind of stay grounded.
Exactly. Smallness. Hey, let's go back to another theme that I've used here a lot on Winds of Change. Timothy Gordon, who has a wonderful book called Catholic Republic, speaks about the virtues of smallness for the Republic. Mm-hmm. And in a country as large as the United States of America, which is trying to maintain its Republic characteristic that the smallness of the states have to have their own integrity. Mm. And as you build something large has to be built. If something large is going to be great, it has to be built with a lot of small, great things. And a small, great high school community fits into the idea of this sense of the sense of subsidiarity that needs to be within a large nation state like the United States of America. So small is definitely not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Big is not necessarily a good thing.
Right, right.
But young people, especially eighth graders getting ready to go to high school, they're thinking, if I want to be on a sports team, for instance, and so many kids do, then they want to play. And if you're in basketball, you want to play a basketball game in front of what? A large audience. And so the dreams of a high school, a big high school that's large, feed into the young person's desire to be famous, I guess you could say, you know.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
And to be honest, large means there's more talent in some ways. You know, there's a great, if you're having a theater, if you're going to do a play, and most high schools have a play in the fall and in the spring, you're going to, only the best of the best actors and actresses are going to make the cut. Hmm. So you'll have a good play. That being said, I've been to a number of the plays that Chesterton has for their students, and you've done incredible. You've bitten much to do about nothing was the last spring's play. You did Hamlet, I think.
Macbeth.
Or it was Macbeth. Yeah.
Bad luck to say that. So sorry.
Oh, right, right. taking off some very challenging, and don't the faculty. That doesn't the faculty sort of twist the students' arms into being a part of the play?
No. Actually, all of our students are a part of the play. I'm actually glad you mentioned that thing about, you know, trying out for plays and that kind of thing. I think one of the really unique and attractive things about the school, really one of the main reasons I came there, is that it makes excellence the standard rather than just, you know, the cream of the crop. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you really see that in drama. And actually, you know, you see that come out in sports. You know, just not all kids are athletically talented, but I would say most of them do play sports or some sport during the school year. And it's just so great to see someone who's not naturally athletic, you know, make a basket or, you know, their one free throw that they made for the whole semester or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, it's cool that it calls everyone to excellence.
Well, some of the plays that I've seen, some of the actors and actresses, the boys or girls, young men or women, they're not like natural actors. It's clear that this is the first play they've been in, first time they've been in front of an audience on a stage. And it's scary. That would scare the heebie-jeebies out of me if I was in those. But yet, them doing it is a tremendous part of their character development.
Oh, definitely.
It seems, you know?
Yeah, doing the difficult things is really important in the formation of a young person.
Yeah, yeah. You can do this. Also, it's not unusual to see in a class let's say a class in mathematics, or maybe, I don't know if they have computer science, but obviously math is a part of computer science. And you might get into a discussion about Immanuel Kant and his understanding of what is true and certain. Mm-hmm. Because Immanuel Kant, of course, all my philosophical listeners would know, was the great modern, well, I don't know how great he was, but he was a modern famous philosopher who said only real things that are certain are things like mathematical certainty. You have, you could say 2 and 2 equals 4, and you can be sure that that is true. And then he applies that to all sorts of other areas of life. And of course, that kicks the legs out of the table upon which religion is standing, shall we say, because the truths of religion, the certainties of religions, aren't like the truths of mathematics. Anyways, I digress, but that's the kind of digression that you will see in a Chesterton Academy of the Holy Family math class or other such things.
Yeah. Well, we don't actually have a computer science class. We're actually a tech-free classroom. A lot of the emphasis is on Socratic dialogue and discussion. You know, just in keeping...
They'd have to not only turn their cell phones off, right?
Right.
They have to keep them in their locker or something
like that? Yeah, we like that. We're already lengthening attention spans, I think, just by doing that. But, you know, just in keeping with our founder's name, you know, we do want them to be good rhetoricians, so they should be able to explain the faith and all of their ideas. And we think that taking the technology out of the classroom actually helps a lot.
Speaking of the founder's name, G.K. Chesterton, we're going to have to get to a couple of salient quotes here as we go into the importance of history in the life of a Catholic. Or can I invite every person of goodwill, any person who believes in God? There should be a deep sense of getting history right. And unfortunately, we live in a time where it doesn't seem to matter. For so many. So let's take a quick break right here. Nick wants us to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Dear friends, you may have noticed that our live stream has been down. We're looking under the hood to get that fixed. Now, in the meantime, visit the Winds of Change Facebook page and look at the top post and click on the Vista Stream Guys link to download the Winds Media Player so that you can enjoy Winds of Change on your computer, no matter how you listen. Thank you for listening to Winds of Change.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org, and enter into the presence of Christ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced-level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's 1 block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for being here with me. I'm Father Tom Coyes. I have a special guest with me today, a wonderful young lady by the name of Rachel Gerardo. She's a member of the Chesterton Academy of the Holy Family team. She's also a member of the St. James of the SAG, great parish out in the southwest side of Chicagoland in Lamont, Illinois. Any other teams you belong to? You're not on the U.S. women's soccer team.
And, no.
Were you going to protest the national anthem? Like, what's her name?
Oh, no, I don't I don't play soccer. I'm a good American. So, you know, real sports like basketball.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I heard that on the news the other day, yesterday, I think it was, that the women's soccer team is doing well again in the World Cup.
Double-digit wins, right?
Yeah. But anywho, one of our common loves is the writings of G.K. Chesterton and the person of G.K. Chesterton, what he was for so much time. You know, I was reading from Night of the Holy Ghost, a short history of G.K. Chesterton, and I didn't realize, I knew he converted to Catholicism, of course, and I knew he was friends with Hilaire Belloc,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize even Hilaire didn't think Chesterton was going to convert to Catholicism, even though so much of his writings, so much of his thinking sort of lined up with Catholic thought. But since he was in England, since he was an Anglican, the reason that is given for his real hesitancy to join the Catholic Church, even though his heart and his soul wanted to be, was because of his wife. The way Dale Alquist describes it is a touching way to describe it. Not because his wife was so anti-Catholic, although she must have had some spirit of anti-Catholicism, being a good Anglican, I guess. But the way he describes it is, because they were so close and they had a deep relationship as husband and wife, and he couldn't imagine doing something so big, so profound, without the partner of his life, which is kind of touching.
Yeah.
And she thought he was going to become a Catholic, and she didn't know that she herself was part of the reason why he was hesitant. Somewhere along the line, he said he has to do it, and he hopes that she understood. So, and I think she did accept it, certainly, and was, in a sense, happy for him. But anyways, he's filled with wit and wisdom, and he's writing, 100 years ago, and everything he says is so pertinent for today. Mm-hmm. And let's use a couple of quotes here, because I do want to get back to that topic of why being steeped in history is so important for a believer, especially for a Catholic, but everyone. And as we forget about history, we make being Catholic more difficult in a certain sense. Here's a good one. And he's talking about freedom of speech. Of course, that's kind of a hot topic for today, because in a lot of universities and places, you have to have safe zones, right?
You just wrinkle my brain.
Here's what will wrinkle your brain. This is what Chesterton says. Freedom of speech today means practically that we must only talk about unimportant things. Isn't that a good one? I mean, you could talk about anything except those things that really are at the heart and soul, the core of life, about which people have very different beliefs. And of course, important things are like doctrines.
Yeah.
And so you're not supposed to talk about those.
But yeah. That reminds me of my favorite Chesterton quote, which is, it's along the lines of saying, it's sort of silly to say that you shouldn't talk about politics and religion, because politics is about our relationship with our neighbor, and talking about religion is about our relationship with God.
So, bingo. Yeah. And so if you don't talk about those two things, you're going to talk about
Celebrities, Kardashians,
sports, your next vacation,
emotions,
the lottery.
Yeah.
And so, I'm going to risk something by saying I think our church has to be at least more comfortable with diving into political topics. And I know that's almost a heresy.
Mm-hmm.
In trying to be as fair and as respectful and as courteous and charitable and all as you can. But it's just an amazing bit of history, of modern history, of our contemporary history, that listeners to this radio show know that I've often quoted Dennis Prager, who's a national syndicated talk show host, of course, and many of you listeners probably know who he is and listen to him. And he often will say that as he tries to promote sort of a political conservatism, which obviously he does, many of those people become more religious.
Hmm.
And even though he's not Christian, he's a Jewish man, he's not Catholic, of course, people who are non-practicing whatevers, nuns, you know, and they are the constant topic of almost all our diocesan evangelical conferences. We're always looking for how do we reach the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, of course. Of course, you could reach the nuns, N-U-N-S, too, but it's a different topic. But the fact that Prager has said on so many occasions that a person's turning a bit toward, let us say, the pro-life versus pro-choice stand, the position of pro-marriage between man and woman versus pro-gay marriage, a position of conservative economic policy, a position of national sovereignty vis-a-vis some control of borders. All these politically conservative ideas and positions, if you start to see the rational side of these things, then you start to become more religious. Mm. It's a strange aspect of evangelization that evangelists don't want to touch.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say the ones that I'm especially aware of in my Catholic Church, it can be too deep and it can be too strong of a bond between religion and politics where you only go to a church because of the politics.
Mm-hmm.
Catholicism has this great egotistical sense that they can keep political sides together. Mm-hmm. And it's a good goal, and by and large, it's a good goal to strive at. At times, though, two sides can't be kept together, and one has to win and one has to lose. And so in that whole sense, there can be an angle to winning the young people for Christ. But I don't think that's very popular theory today. I don't know if you would agree with me, Rachel.
Yeah, well, I think what makes him very good at actually getting people to consider religion is, I would say, that this might be a minority opinion, but I think he's one of the few talk show radio hosts, present company accepted,
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
who actually cares about making his audience better people. Like, if you look at any of his videos, they're all about growing in virtue or developing good habits.
Yeah.
You know, whereas other talk show hosts, they talk about tax policy and other
policies. You know what? One of my dreams is that I would be his sidekick or his go-to Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
For things that deal with religious, especially Christianity. Because most of the Christians that are close to him and that are a part of his worldview, his understanding of Christianity come from Protestant Christians.
Right, right.
And he since he's not a Christian, he's not going to bite off and chew. He's got a somewhat skeptical attitude about Protestant Christianity.
Yeah, he's very charitable, I think, to their points of view, right.
And the moral side of issues is a great unifying factor. Mm-hmm. And the moral side of issues of today are border on political issues of today. That's where I like to tell my listeners that I'm very Aristotelian in that sense, if people know who Aristotle was, and if you know what that means, because Aristotle saw that he first wrote his a book on ethics called Nicomachean Ethics, mm-hmm. and the very next thing he puts in his book is politics, and the beginning of politics is very much like the beginning of the Acts of the Apostles in the Bible. I say that because Luke wrote the Gospel of Luke, and then Luke wrote the Acts of the Apostles, and at the beginning of the Acts of the Apostles, Luke says, well, now I'm going to continue. Before I talked about the life of Jesus, now I'm going to talk about the life of the early church. Mm. And that's exactly how Aristotle put ethics and politics together. Mm. And so, but that's what the ecumenical movement sort of did the opposite. The ecumenical movement of the 60s after the Vatican Council said, okay, let's get together and do liturgy together. But since we can't agree on political issues, we're just going to ignore ethical issues, since we know those divide us so badly. And what I mean by that is Catholics were against artificial birth control, contraception. Protestants were for it. So let's not try to be unified in terms of morals. Let's just be unified in terms of liturgy. And so a lot of Catholic parishes and churches and theologians and teachers bend over backwards to make our liturgy more Protestant friendly. And so there we have it. It looks like Nick wants us to take another break, but one more Chesterton quote when we come back, and then I promise you we're going to get into this discussion about history, and we gotta smooth some things out, okay? And I know Rachel's going to help me with that. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Save the dates for Prairie Fest, Friday through Sunday, August 9th through the 11th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois.
More info at ByzantineCatholic.com.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for listening. I'm Father Tom Coyes, wrinkling your brain here a little bit. I have Rachel Geraldo in the studio with me, and I sometimes introduce her as a brain because she's got an intellect soaring with the eagles.
You got to manage expectations here, okay?
All right. That's good. Well, the more I can get you on the radio here with me, Rachel, the more the people will love you. Here's a couple other Chesterton quotes. that will lead us to the main topic of today, which we're halfway through the show. We better get to it sooner or later. He says this, the Bible tells us to love our neighbor and to love our enemy, generally because they are the same people. Isn't that a good one?
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, you're kind of like, I could love my friends, but I don't want to. I have to hate my enemies. But he sees that insight that so often people are mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
And your family is a mixed bag. Your spouse is a mixed bag. Your children are a mixed bag. Your parents are a mixed bag.
It does speak to one of his great virtues, which is being charitable to even his, you know, greatest opponents, right? That's something we can all, I think, take from. It's a little tough, but yeah.
Exactly, exactly. How about this one? And this will lead us to our topic. The spirit of the age is very often the worst enemy of the age. What do you think that? What do you think he means by that? Right? We all know when we say, "Oh, the spirit of the age." What's this? How do we feel the spirit of the age?
Check the trending hashtags on Twitter.
There you go. Yeah. What's popular?
Right.
The whole topic of going viral.
Yeah. Look at the culture, the movies, the literature.
Yeah. And I'm gonna concretize it by saying that what is one of the strong spirit of the ages today is the rainbow flag. We're in the month of June, and mm-hmm. you can't go anywhere around this here big city of ours. I was just up in Madison, Wisconsin, and their rainbow flags are flying everywhere.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Madison prides itself in being quite immoral.
Yeah.
But see, they won't think of it that way. But that being what Chesterton is saying, the spirit of the age is very often the worst enemy of the age. What I want to propose you, my listeners, to think about is this strong sense of let us be proud about this new definition of intimate relationships. This is a family radio show, so I can't describe things exactly as they are, but you have to put the pieces together yourself, my friends. But what comes across is the virtue of tolerance is the spirit of the age, but that spirit of tolerance could be the enemy of our age, in the sense of we're dismantling the foundation of what has usually been understood as natural law. Theories of right and wrong that are based on nature, that we explore, we discover, we can manipulate nature in one way or another for our benefit, which is what happens quite often in medicine or in architecture. There's many aspects of life where we are called upon to manipulate nature, but that kind of manipulation of nature is always somewhat in harmony with the spirit of nature or the goal of nature. In other words, I often use the example of my eyeglasses. My eyes go bad. I want to be able to see. The purpose of my eyes is being damaged by whatever it is, eye disease or whatever. And so we manipulate the nature of our eyes with context or lenses so that we can see better. That's a kind of manipulation of nature that's in harmony with the purpose of nature. The great pride in gay marriage today is contradicting one of the purposes of human sexuality. And obviously what I'm pointing to is the concept of procreation, that is a recreation, it's a reestablishment. See, a couple of weeks ago I mentioned on this show, and I think I shared with you, Rachel, too, I made a reference in a sermon that I gave recently.
Sermongate,
yeah, around my small circles, it's known as Sermongate. And I simply pointed out that the thunderous applause connected to our new mayor's announcement that she is the first lesbian mayor, that I sensed that thunderous applause was something like the applause of the Bastille, the tearing down of the Bastille. And of course, those people who don't care about history don't know what I'm talking about. But someone, we should know what the Bastille is, because that was the prison in Paris, France, that was stormed at the beginning of the French Revolution. People were dragged out of the, well, some people were released from the prison, and the prison guards and the people running the prison were swiftly dragged off and killed. Mm-hmm. Anyways, but there is that sense of, there's that, the cheering that comes about in the sense of victory. Victory over something. Victory over an enemy. Mm-hmm. And my sermon pointed out that I sensed a demonic sense, a demonic presence in the great cry of victory over the mayor's announcement of her lesbian characteristic as a tearing down of one of the fundamental pieces of Catholicism, one of the fundamental pieces of Western civilization, namely the natural bond of man and woman in marriage and for the family. So that's certainly a spirit of the age. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying to you, my listeners, that this spirit of the age, like Chesterton is saying, is the worst enemy of our age. It's going to help topple our society, like so many historians have predicted. If America falls, it's going to fall from within, not from without. Wasn't it even Benjamin Franklin and John Adams who said such things, right? Mm-hmm. So, anyways, let's go. Let's take a historian of today conservative. Oh, there we are. Yes, that's an important
Hello
time
there.
To bring
Peabody
in Peabody.
Here.
Thank you
Once
for showing
again,
up.
It is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Well, it's one of my favorite topics, and it should be more in the minds of our modern world, is the Reformation, because there were some important mistakes that need to be corrected, as it were. And not that the church didn't need reform. It certainly did, and there was corruption. But the antidote that some people like Martin Luther and John Calvin and the rest, William Cecil up in England and all the rest, their cure was worse than the disease, as we sometimes say. So this sense of history, we need it. And since I bring it up, I also bring up those who listen to Winds of Change every now and then will notice that I have a strong sense of holy forgetfulness. Have you heard me mention that, Rach,
mm-hmm.
in a
yeah,
sense?
Yeah, yeah.
This applies to this. When going into history and uncovering some bad things, you're supposed to learn something, and then you're supposed to forget it. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is, okay, Martin Luther did some bad things. Know what he did, and then in a spirit of holy forgetfulness, put it aside, because we are called on now to love Lutherans mm-hmm. and many other Protestant Christians that have followed Luther's mistake. So this sort of sense, it's kind of like when you look back on the Civil War. Okay, we are going to look back on the Civil War, and you'll say, oh, wait a minute. The South was trying to defend slavery. You got to learn that point. But then I'm going to apply the virtue of holy forgetfulness so that I can praise the virtue of someone fighting for their homeland and being willing to die for a cause, Now, a cause may be, in my mind, a very bad cause.
Mm-hmm.
But I can respect the fact that it was very disputed in those days and that they were following their conscience, though their conscience was ill-formed. What I'm getting to is, as a person who loved Abraham Lincoln and supported his stand on slavery, can look at a statue of Robert E. Lee and apply my spirit of holy forgetfulness,
mm-hmm.
and say he's a very important member of this country. I don't want to tear down his statue, in other words,
mm-hmm.
because I'm applying holy forgetfulness with my spirit of holy remembering.
Right.
You need to remember. So the same thing can be said about the Reformation as well.
Hmm.
Do you have a sense of that Catholics today appreciate our Catholic history?
Hmm.
Or what are some of the blind spots, would you say?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, and you brought this up on the show, especially American Catholics, if they're conservative, I think adopt what is the Whig interpretation of history, which is a Protestant interpretation of history, where
the Whig interpretation. Now, some of our listeners might be thinking that you have to put on a wig in order to interpret.
W-H-I-G, actually.
Which means the political party that was more in tune.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
The English.
Yeah, well, what they would call liberty, English liberty. So you start off, this is their narrative, but, you know, you start off with one way, let's say, of expressing the faith in Catholicism, one hierarchy, and they just control, you know, hang on to power for as much as they can. And what made the world great is personal individualism. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a faulty way of looking at history, but I think if I had to pick out one blind spot in the Catholic kind of outlook, at least in America, that's the one that I would probably focus on. But
yeah. I think it's a very crucial one. As well, let me modernize it a little bit too, and it follows in suit, is the ignorance of the effects of the dissent against Humanae Vitae.
Mm, mm-hmm.
That was back in the 60s. And it was a wide scale negative reaction to Pope Paul VI and his teaching about artificial contraception, and that widespread turning away from a guiding principle, shall we say, a guiding moral principle.
Mm-hmm.
It's forgotten.
Yeah, that's a good point. What's that book you recommended about the debate on humanity?
Oh, yeah, the coup at Catholic University.
There's that. And then another documentary and a book just came out about Father Hesburgh at Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
That examines those issues. But there's a rich history around that. Yeah. But you're right. I think people don't even realize there was so much controversy.
No. And to say we got to recover the Catholic moral conscience, you have to deal with that issue,
mm-hmm.
And that's we're trying to remake. We're in a program in the Archdiocese of Chicago now called Renew My Church, and we're faced with I call it a threefold shortage. The threefold shortage is one, not enough priests; two, not enough people in the pews; and three, not enough money. So we're faced with threefold shortage, and so we're trying to renew the church. One of the parts of that, the key part of the Renew My Church, is to consolidate and downsize.
Mm-hmm.
To use a business term, it's downsizing so that, and in business, people do it all the time so that you can survive unless you're going to go bankrupt.
Yep. Layoffs.
So, there's things called layoffs and mergers and all the rest.
Right.
We all know that it's part of reality. And so the church is in the midst of it. But without without taking a real hard look at some of our mistakes and how our conscience was malformed, we're just doomed to just continuing the same downward trend instead of really coming to a real reformation, a real renewal, a real reform. And to learn from history about the first reformation, and to we've got to see the negative sides of the Protestant Reformation. I have some things here from the Dennis Prager radio show, but I'm just going to at least point them out. Many people know, some people know the name Eric Metaxas. Mm-hmm. He's a political conservative type historian, and he came out with a book recently on Martin Luther, and his one of his main points is that Luther saved civilization by saving the virtue of freedom. I guess you could sort of, that's his theory, because Catholicism was enslaving people's minds by insisting on certain doctrines. You know, you had to believe this to be a good Catholic. Martin Luther comes around and says, no, you don't. I free you from Catholic popedom. And of course, papists was the term that was used all the time for Catholics, starting in Europe and then growing a lot here in the United States. Do you get a sense? I'll put in the form of a question, Rachel. Do you get a sense that Protestant Christians, who all of us know and love and have many friends and respect, and I talk on these topics with the greatest deal of charity in my heart and love and respect for many of them. I like Fulton Sheehan used to say many times, the Protestants have the fire of passion and but lack the light of truth. Mm. Catholics sometimes have the light, the fire of the light of truth, but lack passion, which I think is sometimes an accurate description.
Well, that's why you sit in the back of the church, right?
right. Don't want to get too involved, as it were. But my question is do you think that many of the Protestants have an askewed vision of the Reformation?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think actually that that attitude, that Whig interpretation of history, I think is probably something they share. That's sort of part of the Anglo heritage of our country, is to have that outlook. It's incomplete. It does leave something to be desired.
Yeah. And let's try to dig into that incomplete. What are they missing? One of the things I'll propose that, and this applies for a lot of Catholics as well, not just Protestant Christians. One of the things they're missing is the sense of battle that went on from the time of Jesus to the time of Martin Luther.
Mm-hmm.
To open up any pages of history, you see that the false narrative is that Catholicism dominated for 1,500 years the landscape of Europe, and that domination included not just domination in the sense that it influenced everything and everyone, but domination in the terms of enslaving people's minds,
mm-hmm.
that they were teaching people not to be free thinkers.
That sounds so great. I mean, life would be so easy, if only.
we had insight into the truth that was given to us, maybe, is that, you know? Well, there certainly can be an abuse of anything, and even abuse of the truth. You could say, okay, don't think for yourself, just believe in the Trinity, let's say. Or don't think for yourself, just believe in monogamy. You say, well, what if I'm questioning it? What if I'm questioning it? Saints throughout the course of history allowed for questioning. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a theory. It wasn't a religion that was shoved down people's throats. And the battles that went on Eric Metaxas, in his new book on Martin Luther, describes the first 1,500 years of Europe as just being dominated by Catholicism, which is laughable in my mind. Number one, because the first 500 years, how could you say these Christians who were being fed to the lions and otherwise martyred for 500 years dominated the European landscape? They dominated with their blood. If you want to call that dominating, I guess they're guilty of that. But it was the pagan Roman emperors that dominated the time up until the fall of the Roman Empire, as it were. And another thing is they said, well, it was the only religion. Well, Eric Metaxas says, well, it was the only form of Christianity. I was like, okay, well, he's right about that. Okay, yes, it was the only form of Christianity, except for he recognizes the split between the East and the West, of course. But to say that it was the only form of religion is laughable because all the tribes and the nations and the groups of people that Christians were encountering had their religion.
Of course,
It was just pagan religion. And so there's this great naivete about the Protestant Christians who think that the Catholics just came along and dominated the pagans. They don't realize how hard it was to convert the pagans to Christianity in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
And then once Christianity sort of started taking root and becoming more popular, the priests, the bishops, and the popes didn't have their way with emperors and kings and princes and noblemen. They fought constantly with the political powers. One of the great examples from history that is so lost by most Protestants and most Catholics is the battle between some of the popes and Emperor Charles V, right at the time of the Protestant Reformation. The Emperor Charles V was a Catholic, of course, and he was sworn to defend Catholicism when threatened. And of course, in the Protestant Reformation, Catholicism was being threatened. And so the Emperor Charles V said, hey, there's a lot of debates going on in theology. This Luther guy is making a lot of interesting theological points. And he admitted, he said, as the emperor, he says, I'm not a theologian. Pope, call together a council and answer these objections. And the Pope was too worried at the time about the Papal States up in northern Italy at the time, and he's dismissing the calls from the emperor to call a council. That's why the Council of Trent took so long, like 25 years to get to. And so to say that Catholicism dominated, or that there wasn't this battle, every inch of ground was a great battle, as it were, either between clergy and politicians, or between clergy and clergy, or between. And so the idea that Luther came along and freed us from tyranny is laughable.
Right.
You know, oh dear. I'd love to have you on. We got to analyze Eric Metaxas's book.
Definitely.
And we got to take it piece by piece.
Take it apart.
We got to take it apart. And as so often happens, the show runs out. That music means we're at the end of The Winds of Change. I want to thank Rachel Giraldo for being here with me, and I'm going to try to convince her to come some more. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see? The winds have changed. We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is